Welcome to Express with Doc XMD and Audra RN, your weekly call-in chance to express what you would do when compelling issues from the media, health, politics, law, business, relationships, entertainment, and sports challenge your values, ethics, integrity, leadership, and professionalism. To send your comments by Facebook email, use your Facebook account and type Express with Doc XMD and Audra RN, and use the email tab, or you can tweet at Doc XMD and Audra RN on your Twitter account. Now here are your hosts, Doc XMD, Dr. Alan Zanakis, and Audra RN, Audra Renee Smith.
Why, thank you, Mark the Edwards. Hello, everyone. I'm Dr. Alan Zanakis, MD.
And I'm Audra Smith, RN. You're listening to a special edition of Express with Doc XMD and Audra RN.
For the past year, we've dedicated Express to bringing you comfort and inspiration through music, poetry, and timely information, while each of us address the challenges of COVID-19 disease prevention. As your response continues to be heartwarming for our ninth year on the air, we're excited to add two new regular features to our regular Express programming.
Our first feature is called Congressional Close-Up. Each week, we will have U.S. Congressman Pete Sessions as a regular guest to brief us on legislative happenings in Washington, D.C. that affect us all.
Our second feature brings our ZenaView panel to Express. This panel is made up of bipartisan individuals who will share their views on the burning ethical issues of the week.
We are recording Express from our home instead of the studio, so we will not be taking any calls tonight, as this program is pre-recorded.
Because our interviews are pre-recorded by Zoom across the country, they're subject to sound variations, so please be understanding that some of the audio you will hear tonight was not possible to be recorded at the level of in-studio quality. So here is tonight's Express lineup. The first half will bring you our new feature, Congressional Close-Up with U.S. Congressman Pete Sessions.
We're thrilled that we can bring real-time messages to folks throughout all of the district that you represent.
I would just tell you that both of you are amazing. We'll never have to yell and scream at each other, but we are going to talk about health care. We're going to talk about Social Security. Good. We're going to talk about some things that are very important, and that substance is important.
The second half of Express will feature our ZenaView panel. Now, sit back and enjoy Express.
Let's begin the segment of Congressional Close-Up with Congressman Pete Sessions from Washington, and great to have you on with Express with Doc XMD and Audra RN.
What a great chance to be back with you for our second real opportunity to effectively communicate with people in a detailed way. And I applaud both of you for not only taking time out of your day, but also on my side, my staff, Nicole Meyer, is doing a great job. And we're very excited about the opportunity to speak in detail about the things that people have on their mind in Central Texas.
We really appreciate it, Congressman. And we know how busy you are. But more importantly, we know how dedicated you are to representing the folks in Central Texas, and we really appreciate it. From a bipartisan standpoint, we really appreciate everything you do for Texans. It's really first class. We'd like to talk today, if we could, about the COVID relief bill. And just in general, we've all kind of kidded around in our families about being fiscally responsible and not writing checks we can't cover that are in the bank. Before we get into the specific COVID relief bill, where are we just in general in terms of being fiscally responsible in Congress as it relates to writing checks that maybe in the future our kids and grandkids are going to have to pay for?
The issue that you bring up is very complex and it's deep, and it deals with several different components, Doctor. And the components that we're presently dealing with, because we have a change of administration, are very interesting. First, let me say this. There are government mandates that are placed on people that President Trump did. And then there are mandates that were placed on people in states and in cities and counties. Each of these were done at the discretion of local people. They made a determination about whether they would open or close businesses. By the way, my own personal viewpoint is every business is essential. But this was given part of what we understand of President Trump not trying to control this, not a one-size-fits-all by the national government. People adapted themselves to that one way or another, the airlines and other people. As a result of that, there were massive problems with people working, industry staying alive as a result of these mandates. So we had the first, what we would call COVID payments. They were made last year. They were made based upon what people reported to the Internal Revenue Service in 2019. This was done in 2020. It cost several trillion dollars. Now, to your point, we are spending money now that is intended to help save business and individuals. We care deeply about people and their ability to keep their families going, to avoid civil unrest, but to do the right thing. We then watched the year go by, and we have been told as of this week that there are millions of doses of COVID that sit for local municipalities and people to use. I don't know whether this is a difference between one administration or the other. I doubt it is because the same bureaucracy is there. The federal government, in working with the free enterprise system in this biomedicine pharmaceutical area, have produced millions of vaccines that are awaiting use. We are finding where about 7 to 8% of the country, the numbers that I have seen, are people who have received at least the first dose. This is a rollout. It is designed to help every location, every state. But we still find that even here in the United States Congress and in places around the country where there are huge numbers of businesses still shut down and they're struggling. So there is a second COVID bill. Now President Biden has made a determination that he wants to stick to $1,400 per individual for people to receive this money. What Republicans are concerned about is not so much the $1,400, even though we think it should be a little bit less. What we're concerned about is all the other things that get thrown in to that bill. And that is the process that Republicans are being very careful in watching. We're watching, and so you have seen several senators that are aligned with the Democratic Party have indicated that they are going to be very cautious in what they agree to. So as long as we're dealing with the anywhere from $1,000 to $1,400 per person, I think the Republican Party, certainly myself, would see that this would be a process that people would follow, those that had filed with their 1040s and filed as taxpayers, that we will see that. But we will vigorously oppose things that go and pay cities or counties for the riots that occurred this summer to pay them back. And so this is the line that's being drawn in the sand. It's a line where I am. Where there are rules and regulations that do not encourage people to go work or their business, we think that this is proper to take care of and help the American people.
Congressman, how are we in Congress going to uncouple where the Democrats want clearly and have said clearly over and over again that they're not going to move from standing, as you pointed out, giving relief to cities that probably weren't as efficient in terms of dealing with either the riots or COVID-19. And we've got states like South Dakota, Florida, and Texas, which were extremely efficient and conscious toward the constituents in those states. How do you feel about us as Texans paying out or bailing out the New Yorkers or the Californians who probably were not fiscally responsible? How do we uncouple that?
Well, at the very top, I would tell you that this COVID experience, when it was given to every governor initially, this is federalism. As we gave that opportunity through public notice, and certainly the Congress was aware of it through the president, we virtually paid for every single piece part of COVID, from the multiple testing to the setting things up. Hundreds of billions of dollars has been set aside. And this is one of the issues that I'm glad you brought up, and it's really real simple. There's $1 trillion yet to be spent that is still sitting waiting to be spent that was authorized last year. And so what we're trying to say is, as members of Congress that try and be responsible, just as the question you're giving me, why are we allocating more money until we have used the money that we have? Over $1 trillion that is sitting in proper utilization to pay for the distribution, to pay for the results, to pay for states and cities to set these up. And so, but that's why we believe, why spend $1 trillion until you've used what you have?
What seems to be coupled with the COVID relief bill is raising the minimum wage to $15. And on the surface, all Americans feel we don't want to see anyone in the poorhouse and anyone suffering. But as you've pointed out so well, that just doesn't seem to be a number that will work for small businesses and even for people who are working for a minimum wage right now. So could you please comment, first of all, do you see, Congressman, that ultimately whatever COVID relief bill is approved, that the $15 minimum wage for all workers, including federal workers, will ultimately be part of what's approved, or do you see some change in that?
The latest information we have is that there are several United States senators, remembering that in the House of Representatives, Mrs. Pelosi, as Speaker, has all the votes she needs to pass the bill. We as Republicans can jump up and down and try and shape or provide information that we think is correct. By the way, one of Mrs. Pelosi's members is from New York, and she worked as a waitress when New York City raised their minimum wage several years ago to $15, one of the most popular night spots in Manhattan that went under. It went under because they were no longer able to pay effectively this minimum wage to all the employees, despite the tips that they might have been making that helped supplement that amount. So if it does not work in Manhattan, which we've seen without a large loss of business and jobs, that's an example of what would be just at exhibit A for the country. Being from Central Texas, we do not have quite the economy at all that they have. And we have part-time workers that want and need these jobs. So on the high side, the question then becomes, what would be allowed by the parliamentarian to be in the reconciliation bill that is before the House and the Senate? What is reconciliation? Well, reconciliation is a legislative process that generally is used by a party that has the majority in the House and in the Senate and in the presidency. And they are allowed by law, going back to 1974, to be able to have one bill that generally is related to revenue and taxes. Revenue and taxes, spending and taxes, many times go together. And this allows the Senate, the United States Senate, to go beyond its 60-vote minimum, which is the threshold that the Senate has held for a long time, whereby they have to have 60 senators to agree. This takes it to a vote of 51 in the Senate. And so when they inform the bodies that they intend to use reconciliation, that means that all revenue must start in the House. All this must start in the House and the plan, and then it would be passed by the House and moved to the Senate. The danger here is that for the Democrats, even though it's a messaging bill, is I do not believe, and certainly as chairman of the Rules Committee, I would not have allowed on the House side for there to be in this revenue measure something that would be on the side of minimum wage. It does not actually deal with revenue to the government. It deals with revenue to wages that are paid. And so I believe the parliamentarian on the United States Senate will view and rule that that is not germane to the bill and would not be allowed. And so then those senators would have to work through their own processes to decide what would fit in their own reconciliation. I do not expect it to be accepted. I have heard already that there's at least one senator from an eastern state that would oppose it. And that's because the minimum wage of $15 an hour in a small state on the East Coast, it would bankrupt company after company after company, because it doesn't work in New York City in downtown Manhattan. Why would you try and make it work in Virginia or West Virginia?
Congressman, it would seem to me that if I were on the Democratic side and following the argument about reconciliation, let's argue that it passes through a parliamentary procedure and the Democrats can put the $15 minimum wage underneath a money side that would be approved for reconciliation. Isn't that sort of using up your chit? And now if they want in the future to raise taxes and they're not getting the right votes, they can go through reconciliation, but they can't because they've already used it for the minimum wage?
Well, these were all good points to make. And I would say to the young doctor, this is where that party needs to use, and it's measure three times and saw once of what would be allowed in it. And of course, no one speaks in my party off one single vote, and I don't think anybody speaks off their party in a single messaging element, but that they are well knowledgeable of the limitations of reconciliation and what they can do and the political consequences that come from that. But it's done to expedite essentially the first 100 days of a presidency. We utilized this with President Trump when we did our tax bill and other things. And so this has been done before by President Obama. It's a way to get your agenda done, and we'll hold them accountable for it.
Last question, Congressman. How do you manage as a congressman and someone who deeply cares for your constituents in Texas and Central Texas, how do you manage the psyche when the ordinary person here in Texas and across the country is thinking, these people in Washington are making great money, they're getting great salary, and they're coming across as Scrooges, whether it be in the COVID relief bill or the raising of the minimum wage, and they really don't care about us, and we're the little guy that always gets hurt. And yet you're trying to send a message really clearly, at least from your office, Congressman, that you do care and that you're trying to protect everyone. How do we deal with the psyche of the voter to say, we're not Scrooges, we really care, we're just trying to be fiscally responsible?
Well, as you suggest, there's two sides to every coin here. One side of a coin where I have said that I do believe that where it deals with money back to people, whether it's $1,000 or $1,400 per taxpayer that is a taxpayer, where there's a qualification and a standard there, I don't want to stand in the way of that. Whether we want to be seen as a Scrooge or a responsible person, our country's in a difficult circumstance. We're paying for all these shots. All of them are free. The things that we're giving, the federal government's paying for it. But there is a limit, and the limit comes with don't take advantage like what was done last time and send the Kennedy Center $250,000 and other places $500,000 and foreign governments and foreign operations where you're adding $2 billion or where we're going to add to the International Monetary Fund $3 trillion worth of open checkbook. This is a line that my party, me as a conservative Republican, will take. Where it is done with the correct balance to help people, I'm for it. Where the government gets engaged, because it's in all of our best interest to have the COVID, not only testing, but the vaccine that's available, I'm there. But when it comes to using this process just to pass things that is an emergency for a non-emergency basis to justify the things that are difficult, that's the line. And I want to thank you for asking, because there has to be an understanding. People say where that line is, and I hope I clearly laid out what I believe that line is for me.
You clearly have, and I want to express for both myself and for Audra, your schedule is incredibly busy, and you cut out of a meeting specifically so that you could share your words and thoughts with our audience here in Texas. And I can't tell you how grateful we are that you're representing the folks in Central Texas in a first-class way. Any thoughts, Audra?
I just want to agree with Doc, and thank you for sharing those details. It was extremely insightful, and I know that our listeners are going to be able to be better for it, understand where you're standing and how you are voting and aligning with the principles that folks that elected you want you to do. So you're doing the job that they want. And as far as looking at the COVID bill and being able to really focus on the American people rather than all of these other things that the American people may or may not be supporting, I commend you on that, because the COVID bill should be for businesses and the people that have suffered, not to be adding on all of these other things as an opportune moment to justify some spending that the taxpayers may or may not be supportive of. So thank you for being that in between voice for us to be able to share and vote accordingly.
So how about some good news if I gave it to you? And that is this week we had an opportunity to work with a great university that's located in College Station, Texas A&M. Yes. And we had a conference call, my staff did, with the physics department and a group of physics and mathematical people. I had a chance to jump on there and remind them that I worked at what might be called the old Bell Labs. There aren't a lot of people that remember that. I was on the original team that invented broadband. We moved it to the marketplace from out of New Jersey, where I lived and worked. And then I had a chance to deal with, and hopefully we'll meet with all these two groups this next week when I come down to College Station to the campus and meet with people also that are in the education and health care area, young doctor, about disabilities. And so we will be presenting you both information as you can share it with your colleagues at Texas A&M. But I look forward to this week or next week, this coming week or what would be 2 weeks from now, coming down and meeting with the physics department, these representatives that took time to reach out to me, and then those in the healthcare area and education about disabilities, including autism, and these important activities that are funded from grants from the federal government. So I think that was really good news. These young professors were very energized and energetic. They feel like that their work goes not only to help the American people because of the grants that they receive, but they feel like the taxpayer is really getting their money's worth. So what an opportunity. I look forward to being down on the campus of Texas A&M and meeting with people who are leading edge educators about academic credentialing and prowess that Texas A&M leads the nation in.
We're so happy and excited that you've shared that. We're going to follow that story with you so you can share with the audience what happens in those meetings. Your first class, Congressman, you told the people when you were running for office that you would be the people's congressman, that you would be in your district, that you would be listening, and you're doing everything that you said you would do. And we're really proud of you, and we're really grateful that you're sharing those thoughts and those experiences and those efforts with our audience here on KMU. We're really proud of that, and thank you for that.
Thank you, and I look forward to seeing Audra. I'll say you too, sir, but look forward to seeing Audra maybe during the next 2 weeks as I'm on the campus of Texas A&M.
We're going to make sure and work with your wonderful person in Washington, Nicole. She's been superb. So we're going to work with her to arrange a meeting with you so we can kind of whiteboard and be most effective in delivering all the great information you have to our audience. We're really excited about that.
Thank you, and God bless both of you. Go Aggs.
Go Aggs. God bless you, Congressman. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye. You've been listening to United States Congressman Pete Sessions from Texas. We're grateful to him for keeping us informed with a weekly congressional close-up from Washington, D.C. on Express with Doc XMD and Audra RN. Now to our Zenview panel with Doc XMD and myself, Audra RN, discussing weekly issues on Express that affect us all. All right. Well, here's how we're going to start it out. We're going to talk about COVID relief bill. Right now, the discussion is that the stimulus money, the checks that are supposed to going out to folks, are going to be put on a debit card versus direct deposit. These debit cards are going to be sent in a white envelope with a Treasury Department seal on the outside. The card itself is supposed to be a Visa debit card and issued by MetaBank, which is the Treasury's financial agent. It can be used to make purchases, to get cash out of the ATM, or to transfer funds into a bank account without being charged a fee. My question is, how do you feel about that? And how do you feel about it coming through the mail instead of direct deposits? Do you see any benefits or disadvantages with that process? And we're going to go to Brian, also known as Tuffy Tuna.
How are you doing? The mailing system itself, yes, it has been beneficial throughout the years. I mean, a lot of people send debit cards, credit cards. That's how your banks send debit cards and credit cards to you anyways. I can see the concern of the public thinking that it's less safe, but if it's done in a secure manner or so, it should be okay. Compared to direct deposit. Even direct deposit is more of a readily used, like it's right there, you get it right now type of deal. And with it being sent out in the mail and stuff, like, it's probably going to delay the process also. So a lot of people going to take a longer time for people to get their money to spend. Who to tell when they're going to get the mail, when they're going to get this thing? It probably take weeks or so.
What do you feel about if someone uses the debit card and for whatever the purchase is, do you find that potentially an invasion of privacy issue, that card's going to be associated with your purchases? Do you have a problem with that, or does that seem like that's a non-issue?
It wouldn't bother me because I'm not making any like outrageous purchase that's probably, say, maybe illegal, because that's the only reason why someone would think that the government or so want to trace their purchases, or is the money going to buy food items or, you know, household items, stuff like that, or are you just going to buy alcohol? I mean, I see the concern, but from a personal standpoint, I wouldn't be bothered with that.
All right. Thank you. I appreciate your sharing.
Thanks, Brian. Let's go to Tamika then. And Tamika, your thoughts about the COVID relief bill using a debit card instead of direct deposit to give us access to the $1,400 per person that is in the bill.
I'm very excited about the additional money. I don't care how we get it, if we get a direct deposit or if we get it in a debit card, either way. It's good that they're trying to help people out in these hard times. The fact that it's going to be on a debit card, it makes no difference because, like Brian said, that's how cards are delivered anyway. I would hope for additional security that they would ensure that participants have like a special code or something to ensure that it's the actual person getting the card before they spend it. And as far as our purchases being traced, I'm a member of the military, and if the government wants to know how I spend my money, they have ample means to find out. So that doesn't bother me.
I love it.
I've got a follow-up question on the debit card. When I first heard about us getting our $1,400 per person stipend on a debit card, the first thing I thought about was there are people who are going to lose it. There are people who are going to forget to use it. And is that part of the strategy on our U.S. government that they're hoping that from a public relations standpoint, you hear we're giving everybody $1,400. But from a technical or a logistics standpoint, the administration is saying, goody, there are going to be a number of people that don't use it and will save money.
Yeah, unfortunately. Yes, that's very true. Not everybody's going to use every dime of that's on the debit card. So that money will go back into the treasury.
You just brought up another point that I didn't think of. When I've gotten prepaid cards in the past as gifts, there's always the problem when you get to that last dollar or last couple dollars and yeah. where you're not spending the entire thing and it gets left on the card. And then in the future, when you go out to buy something, there's not enough in the card, so you don't use it. There's that residual that remains on the card, and they're probably banking on that as well.
Yes.
But they say you can transfer the money or withdraw it through cash and stuff. So
yeah, I heard that, and it struck me as being funny that clearly that's what the government is saying. And as Audra's pointed out, that we can transfer funds from the ATM card into our bank account without being charged a fee.
Because if that's the case, really, and you can withdraw money, and then you don't have to worry about someone knowing what you're buying. You just take the money, and then you buy anything with cash.
I question that. And that's what they're saying to us, and I hope it works that way. But every prepaid card that I've got in the past as a gift, it hasn't worked that way. You needed to use the prepaid card to buy a commodity or an article. Mm-hmm. You couldn't even use it to be able to pay off another credit card debt. So I'm hoping that what they're saying, they being the folks in Washington, that we can use it to transfer funds into the bank account without being charged a fee. That'll be great. But that's not been my experience with past prepaid cards that I've gotten. I don't know about you guys.
What would be interesting is if they only allow it to make purchases for like food items. That would be interesting.
You're absolutely right. That would roll into a whole nother level of controlling our own money. Because let's be honest, this money is ours. They're not really giving us anything. We're just getting our money back.
You got the floor, Brittany.
So I think everybody's making great points, but I do feel that the reason they are going to be doing it via card in the mail is because there's a hope that people don't have updated addresses. I mean, that was the nice thing about the direct deposit is it went directly into your account. There was no address associated. So to Tamika's point, not so much that, you know, the active duty member can be tracked on what it is that they're spending, but how do we ensure that the address is correct? I've changed addresses so many times. I don't know what address they even have on file anymore to be able to get the card in the mail. So that's the first thing I got to check is make sure that our address is right. Yeah. You have to have a specific address change with the Treasury. They don't get the update on what your address is when you change it through the post office. And I don't do my taxes where I mail it in. So I'm not sure what address they have on file. So to Audra's point and Doc X's point, I think that this is definitely a tactic in hopes that people don't receive it. And that if they do receive it, that they don't spend it as readily as they would if it was just in their account. If you have this card and you spend, let's say, $1,250 or you even have a dollar left on the card, every dollar for every American not spending that dollar, even that 50 cents, and they just kind of throw the card away because they don't have any purchase that is equal to the amount that's left on the card, that money goes back to the Treasury. And if every single person has that amount left on the card, that's a lot of money. We're talking about, you know, 150 million people. So that, I think, is the tactic. I think that we're on the right mindset as far as why they're doing it this way. And that's unfortunate because that's taking away the money that is ours that we're just getting back. So that's my concern.
I'll just admit that I'm a little concerned that the envelopes are going to be so obvious that those are debit cards. There is, to me, a risk for theft. I'm just going to go ahead and say it out loud. I am very concerned. Unless, like Tamika says, there's going to be some form of verification that you know that it's only you that can do that. And usually those processes are done by the phone. I hope that there is some security measures that are going to be put in place, but I certainly believe that there's some risk of theft and abuse in potentially there.
You're bringing up a whole new level of administrative costs. Let's say that the card says you've got to call this number and give us your PIN number that you're going to use, and then we'll activate the card, kind of thing. And that's a whole new level of administrative costs that we don't have when they put a direct deposit into the bank. Part of this COVID relief bill, from a public relations standpoint, is to be able to release some of the tension and stress that we have over this COVID-19 pandemic. Part of it is to be able to take some of the stress and pressure off us, even if it's for a short period of time. And when you add a new layer of interaction, like this ATM, we've already talked about the possibilities of stress that can occur for people getting it. You didn't get my right address.
Right.
I wasn't able to transfer it into my bank account like you said I could. The person who I wanted to use it for, the retailer, wouldn't accept it. There are a whole bunch of issues that now pop up that make me feel uncomfortable that certainly are not there if you direct deposit it into my account. Let's go to you, Brian. What are your thoughts about that?
For security purposes, they also can send you, do it like a two-step process where they'll send you the card and then they'll send another mail with the PIN for that card. Which therefore means, say, if the card gets lost in the mail, there's no PIN associated with that card. So that, therefore, it's like pretty much null and void. You won't be activated or anything. But in that, if that was the case, how can individuals contact whoever to say, hey, I didn't receive my card? And probably that's the strategy of, well, if you didn't get your card, you didn't get your money, type of deal. So they save money at the end of the day. What's the issue of them not having direct deposit? I don't get that.
Brittany, do you know what the history and the conversation part of is why they are going with debit card versus direct deposit?
Well, no, I don't. And I do think that we're all kind of sniffing this out. It's definitely gonna save them more money because a lot of people they're not gonna get their cards, and it's gonna kind of be that they're SOL. But I wanted to make a comment to Doc's point. He was bringing up the administrative stuff. I mean, think about how much money it's gonna cost to make these cards and send them to people. Like, why are they doing that? Even with the amount of money that they're gonna be saving with people not using them, just for the paper and, you know, mailing these out and creating these cards, I just don't understand. That part I don't understand is with the direct deposit, there was no physical anything. So there was no cost, I don't think, associated like it would be if we're getting a physical card in the mail. So just to add to Doc's administrative costs, I just find that a little mind-boggling as well.
I find it interesting because it is with the Treasury Department. And when we do our taxes, if we owe, usually it's a transfer of funds through your bank account, or it's a check. that you either send in or a money order, et cetera. But when you get a refund, typically they require a bank account for them to transfer the money back into your account. So that's why I've wondered, why are we doing something different here if the process has been in the past that it goes directly into your bank account?
How to be able to control probably pieces of information that we are not privy to. And I'm not trying to be a conspiracist here. It makes very little sense from the standpoint of the consumer, meaning us, that it would be more convenient getting it that way. But it makes all the sense in the world administratively why they, meaning the folks in Washington and the Treasury Department, may want to do it, calculating the money that would be saved by people who won't be using the card properly, won't be getting it, and the rest. Those are just some overview thoughts.
I'm going to submit one more thing, and I know I've brought this up in previously, but I'm going to go back to it for just a second. When the cards come out and say you don't put it in your, transfer it into your bank account and you don't cash out, which I would probably submit that most people are not going to do that. But if they don't, if they do, so be it. So take those folks out. But if you start making purchases, that's data of where Americans are spending their money, and then do all kind of analysis on that. Knowledge is power. I don't know if I'm comfortable with that part of my life being exposed to directly to the federal government. Right now, if I use a credit card, yes, there's data that's associated with that, but it's not with the federal government that they are directly looking at my purchases, when and where and how, and I don't know that I'm comfortable
unless they subpoena it.
They have rights to anything, but this is, I'm giving them this information if they want it.
From a comfort level, I don't understand why you were getting an ATM card, because it makes life more complicated for me as a consumer. And from the standpoint of feeling comfortable that I'm going to get either the PIN or the card, I'm going to be able to use it properly and all the other issues, I just don't feel comfortable with all of that. I would feel that if I got my ATM for $1,400, the first thing that I would do with it is to try to transfer all of that money into my bank account. That's the first thing that I would do. And just thinking of that, guys and gals, that requires me to go to the bank to do that. And during COVID-19 and the pandemic stuff, the relationship with a bank isn't as easy as it used to be pre-COVID. So that's going to create a whole new set of circumstances for people. Brittany, Brian, or Tamika, do you have any last thoughts about the debit card versus direct deposit as it relates to getting our $1,400 tax-free money from the Department of Treasury?
I have one last comment, and it's just to your point of control. During the previous administration, we were not receiving it this way for a reason. I think that with the control factor and us using these cards and our purchases being tracked, because some folks are going to use the cards, I feel that if the current administration had been doing this previously, we would have been getting it this way the whole time. Does it make sense? No. My second point is this is a COVID relief stimulus. And to what you said, Doc, about people needing to go to the bank, we're putting another exposure factor into all of this, where now you have to go and be in front of other people to get this money when people are supposed to be social distancing, not going into these buildings unless you absolutely have to. So it's kind of ironic that the extent that they're going to go and people just aren't thinking about all these things. It's very apparent that there is a reason why they're doing it this way. And if this was done from the other side, just going back playing devil's advocate, I could have seen a whole bunch of hooting and hollering about us having to use a card and exposing ourselves to COVID and blah-de-blah. And here we are talking about it like it's, you know, President Biden did this great thing giving everybody this relief via mail-in cards.
Brian, thoughts?
Brittany does. She has a point where that's concerned. makes you think.
Tamika, did you have something you wanted to say to wrap up that part?
Electronic funds transfer directly into the bank account was definitely more efficient. Certainly not going to be as efficient as it was, you know, before we just got the money in our bank accounts and it was like, yay, it was faster. I'm just happy that we're getting it. And I just hope that it's secure somehow, some way. I don't think it will be, though. Like Audra said earlier, there's an opportunity for theft there. And I want each and every one of you to go on to irs.gov and make sure your address is correct.
Thanks, Tamika. The current administration has decided that they're going to use their prerogative to have a reconciliation acceptance. In other words, the president and his administration will abandon a bipartisan effort to try to get the bill finally passed and using reconciliation instead requiring 51 votes instead of the 60. So we're going to see, even though it was approved initially by the House and then approved again by the Senate, after the final polishing is done by Congress, we're going to see it quickly approved, mainly because the filibuster part will be bypassed using the prerogative that the current administration has in using reconciliation. Having said that, without getting into the complicated definition of what reconciliation means, I'd like to look at another aspect of the bill, and that has to do with billions of dollars that are going to foreign countries in terms of support and relief. Since the bill is called the COVID relief bill, and it's supposed to be focused on U.S. citizens, my question is, why are we sending money to foreign countries that have nothing to do with COVID? Now, some of the money will cover things like vaccines and PPEs and things of that sort, but there are billions of dollars that won't and are going to foreign countries for other reasons. And I have a concern about that it's being lumped into the COVID bill and part of what we as taxpayers will have to pay back in the future. So let's go first to Brittany. Your thoughts about the COVID relief bill really not being just to help us citizens in the U.S. in terms of COVID-19, but also having pork-barreled issues that are involved in it that are helping foreign countries outside of COVID-19.
Well, Doc, you know, you bring up that it was passed in the House and passed in the Senate already, and now they're just going to go ahead and send it through the way that they're going to do it. My concern is shared with yours. There's going to be things added to this bill that didn't previously exist when it was passed through the House and Senate. With other bills that we've seen go through for COVID relief, there were several aspects to these bills that made no sense, like giving money to the National Theater and things that just made no sense when it came to COVID relief. This money has not been touched during this time. And the fact that they're going to add things and push it through and potentially add a whole bunch of relief to these foreign countries, I don't understand why that is the case either. I think that from a standpoint, kind of going back to previous discussions we've had, there's a lot of things going on in the global arena that are a little odd, like jumping right back into the Paris Accord agreement when we were doing just fine. We were doing better than we had previously done being a part of that agreement. And the folks that aren't participating in that agreement benefiting from us being a part of it. I think that that's kind of similar with what we're talking about, passing the stimulus through again in Congress and adding these other countries and the relief that's going to be given to them. It doesn't make sense. I don't know why. And it is definitely something that the average person should be a little concerned about, because we're doing this on several fronts. It's not just the relief bill. We're doing a lot of things right now in the last month that are involving a lot of other countries, and there's no explanation as to why. Do I know the answer? No. Does any average American know the answer to this? No. Is it a question that we should all have? Absolutely. Why are we giving our money, because we're going to be the ones paying it back plus interest, to these other countries? That is the question. So hopefully everyone that's listening is thinking about that now and maybe digging in and asking their officials and government, what's going on? Why is this something that's happening?
Thanks, Brittany. I'd like to go to you, Tamika, and address the same issue. But add on this layer. As Brittany is talking, I'm thinking about the wonderful hearts, the generous hearts of Americans. And if we think and have a view, an image in our head of people who are undernourished and struggling in other parts of the world, and every dollar that we spend will save a life, that's one issue, but we're not being told that. The concern that I have is that that's not where the bulk of the money is going, that it's going to enrich the administrations of other foreign governments, which, quite frankly, we demand to know why it's going there and what it's going to be used for and why we need to be able to have to pay for that. So I'm going to throw it to you, Tamika, and given the urgency with which we want to pass the $1.9 trillion bill, Brittany's right. We already have $1 trillion sitting in the bank that's already been approved that hasn't been spent yet. And now we're asking for $1.9, where a bunch of more dollars are going to be hidden in additions to the bill as it gets polished in the House, which will be added after this past week when it's been approved by the House and the Senate, just kind of stinks. So I'm going to throw it to you, Tamika, and being very focused, how do you feel about a good portion of that money going to foreign countries and we're not sure how as citizens it's going to be used?
I agree. It's completely unfair. It's part of the politics of it all that there's the unknown part that we as normal people don't know. You know, I feel like as if they are kind of robbing Peter to pay Paul. They're taking our money in order for us to help other countries, but we need to help ourselves as a country. We agreed and we voted for our senators and representatives to vote to have this bill pass for us because we wanted the relief. But now I feel like they're stuffing all their other little added little things that they wanted to get funding for into it. So it's unfair.
Thank you both for sharing that. One comment that I'd like to share. The first stimulus package, the only way that it got passed, because it was delayed for months and months and months, was because it did have so much pork in it. It did have a lot of the foreign aid that we were referring to and the different projects within the nation of funding this and that. If we would not have passed a bill like that and used that money for Americans that are really suffering here at home, then we would even need a second stimulus package. If we would have just used the money the way that it was truly supposed to be intended or presented to the American public, was this is for us. Would we have really needed a second one?
You're saying America first.
You've got to take care of your home first before you can help another home. If you're on an airplane, what does the airline stewardess say? If we're going down and there's oxygen, you do yourself before you do your child, because you've got to take care of yourself where you can take care of your children next to you. The other part that I'd like to pull up and discuss with everyone, there is supposedly about $350 billion in bailout to rescue states and local governments like New York and Chicago and Los Angeles, California, that did shut down small businesses and essentially limited the American people's right to make a livelihood. Not to mention some of the infringements upon some religious freedoms by closing places of worship, etc. Yeah, bail them out while they didn't function the way that other states and local governments ran during this pandemic, like Texas and Florida and South Dakota, that kept essentially opened up faster. How do y'all feel about that? Pros and cons? I'd love to hear it.
Let's go to Brittany. What do you think, Brittany?
it seems that, unfortunately, we are taking the brunt of the people that are being and acting responsibly, the locales that are acting responsibly in response to the COVID virus. They're taking the brunt of the folks that didn't financially. That just seems to be more and more the promulgated issue is, even if you were to, you know, pick a side with, you know, one blue, red, Democrat, Republican, I think that that's one of the bigger issues that people feel is that they're acting responsibly and doing things the way they should. But then at the end of the day, they're going to be the ones that are paying for the bad decisions that others make. And that can be said with so many things. I mean, what they're talking about with the education system and college and bail out people that, you know, have college debt, and that's a big discussion. And then there's just so many folks that saved their money and worked two jobs while they were going to school. I kind of feel it's in the same line as that, where they're making it that doing the right thing, that's not promoted, unfortunately. Now, why? Again, this is another question that folks should be seriously thinking about is, why is it that when you're doing things that you're supposed to be doing legally and just responsibly, it seems like there's something that comes out to forgive the folks that aren't doing those things? And these locations that are getting bailed out with this relief, the consequence kind of needs to happen so this isn't something that keeps happening. That's, I think, the biggest issue with this, is that because they keep getting this forgiveness money for whatever, you can plug this into so many different topics, the lesson isn't fully getting learned and it keeps happening. It's almost like it's accepted behavior. And that's a concern because it's going to end up coming out of all the pockets of the people that are acting responsibly and doing things in the thought of helping the majority. That's a problem.
Well, Doc, Express flew by as it does each week. We hope we brought you some comfort and inspiration during this challenging time. We invite you to visit our website here at KAMU-FM, as well as docxmd.com, for more information on this and other Express archive programs. We thank our producer, Matt Dittman, for helping us bring this program to you.
You've been listening to a special pre-recorded edition of Express with Doc XMD and Audra RN from our home. We'd like to thank U.S. Congressman Pete Sessions and our Zenaview panel for being our weekly guests on Express. Also remember, please listen to our award-winning programs, Doc XMD and Audra RN's Funny Feelings, explaining why we do what we do, every Tuesday and Thursday morning at 7:42. We're looking forward to being with you again with our Express program next Tuesday evening at 7 p.m. God bless you all, and thank you for listening.
And as always, God bless and good night, Mom.
You have been listening to Express with Doc XMD and Audra RN, a Tuesday evening weekly call-in program that gives you an opportunity to express what you would do when compelling issues from the media, health, politics, law, business, relationships, social injustice, entertainment, and sports challenge your values, ethics, integrity, leadership, and professionalism. To send your comments by Facebook email, use your Facebook account and type Express with Dr. XMD and Audra RN, or tweet at Doc XMD and Audra RN on your Twitter account. The views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the participants and are not necessarily the opinions of this station or Texas A&M University. This program is a production of KAMU-FM on the campus of Texas A&M University.